Cool. All right. Hypnotic fire writing. Right? It's a little weird, but this is I'm excited. So we start with a great quote, right? The paradox of trauma is that it has both the power to destroy and the power to transform and resurrect. Right. So I thought that was a perfect quote for what we're gonna be talking about. And I'll be honest, this is a little bit of a self-serving. I didn't put that in here. I was reading a book and it's called Opening Up the Power of Confiding in Others. And it's basically how to deal with traumas and the value of it. Okay. And so we'll be talking about that because, and it doesn't just have to be traumas, you know? So basically it's any traumas in the past, you know, traumas is kind of, it's a spectrum, right? So the intensest traumas that you can imagine kind of one end, and it could just be things that bug you on the other end. Okay. I think it's a really cool process. And I've been playing around with this process for the last couple of weeks. I've been sharing with some of my clients have been using it, and it's been working. It's kind of a cool thing. And at the very least, it's just one more option. Okay. And it worked really well for me. So I wanted to share it with you. So basically that's what we're talking about. We're talking about traumas. And typically what happens is when we have a trauma, or even, like I said, again, when I say traumas, I want you to, it's a lot of times I'm going to kind of be sounding about the big traumas, but I want you to understand it's in a spectrum every time I say that. And so sometimes what happens, we can have these traumas and we hold back, right? So any excessive holding back of thoughts, feelings, or behaviors can increase the risk of diseases. And so I'm totally blanking on the guy's name. Usually I write the book and the author here. But like I said, it's Opening Up the Power of Confiding in Others. And what he was, it was a very interesting kind of combination. He was a psychologist. And what he did is he did a lot of work with lie detector machines. And he kind of stumbled on to finding that, he's tracking all these physiological markers when he's interviewing people, you know, about stuff. And what he found out is that when people would confess, even if they got in trouble, one of the examples he uses, they were interviewing a bank vice president about someone had embezzled like 75 grand. And this guy, he finally just came clean with it. And now here you go, right? His career's over. He's probably gonna go to jail. But all of his physiological markers all got better, right? So anyways, experiences like that led him to kind of connect the physical effect of holding on to traumas, or again, specifically kind of not talking about them, inhibiting them. And so it can really increase the risk of diseases. And I know, you know, certainly for me, there's things that happen that I'm not a big want to talk about it type of person. And so this is really, when I read all this stuff, I was like, oh, this is a cool way to do it. And so I kind of put my own little spin on it, and that's what I'll be sharing with you. But again, the whole purpose of it is this, that sometimes when we don't get things out, it can have a negative impact on us health-wise, right? And certainly a lot of other ways too. And so the other goal here, though, that ends up happening is we can free ourselves a lot of pain and a lot of fear. And I mean both of those specifically, lots of other things too, but primarily the pain and the fear, because sometimes when we have, and again, when I say trauma, the spectrum, there's the obvious big ones. And sometimes we don't want to think about them. We kind of push them away. But sometimes it can be as simple as, you know, someone says something rude to us. You see what I mean? And sometimes we don't want to deal with that, or we don't know how to deal with it. And so what happens is when we don't deal with things, we kind of push them down. It becomes almost like the boogeyman under the bed. You know what I mean? And again, it's this unconscious, energy that's fearful. Right. And so we're walking around with that. So this is a process you can use to really kind of free yourself and clear that stuff out. Right? It can be really nice. And I think that what this does is it ultimately allows you to connect to your true potential. Because again, as we're going to talk about, if we're using a lot of energy to push things down, to avoid, you know what I mean? Kind of this whole thing here, we're not really allowing ourselves to put that energy into being the person we want to be. You know? And so a lot of times, not only that process, but sometimes we start to develop our personality based on pushing these things down. And so we literally create a unique personality because of these things that may have happened and that we don't actually deal with. And so we build a personality around inhibiting and repressing them. Okay. And so as we get into the habit of letting these things out, we start to become more of who we are, you know, truly. So, inhibition, right? So that's basically holding this stuff down is how we referred to it. And so it's physical work that uses up energy. Okay. Literally physical. And now we've talked about this because again, you have to think about willpower. You've got to make this shift. Unconsciously, we tend to just intuitively think of willpower as this force, this thing. But willpower is a prefrontal cortex process, just like a muscle. And so it's literally using up glucose in the body, right? It's using up energy. And so again, it can tire us out, literally, because it's using up energy to hold that down. It affects short-term biological changes and long-term health. Okay, so this is what I'm trying to say here. I love this stuff because it's all based around science. And this guy is literally measuring physiological markers, and he's watching what effect inhibiting things has on it. Okay, so again, it's literally, it's affecting blood pressure. It's affecting, you know, your heart rate and a million other things. Okay, it influences thinking abilities, right? And holding back significant thoughts, feelings associated with an event. We typically do not think about the event in a broad and integrative way. And so this is really the key factor here that I really, really liked. That a lot of times what happens is we may have things that happen to us and we just don't know how to deal with them. And maybe we don't have someone that we can feel we can talk to, or maybe we just don't want to talk about it. We don't want to share it. Fine. But what ends up happening is that it kind of just keeps it as it is. It almost keeps it locked away in a glass case, and it always remains the same, as opposed to bringing it up to the surface and really kind of working through it. And that's what we want to do. And again, by not talking about an inhibited event, we usually do not translate the event into language, which prevents us from understanding and assimilating the event, right? So this is the key factor. This is really cool, is that we have different parts of our brain. And so a lot of times when a trauma happens and we're inhibiting it, we're keeping it in the visual part of our brain, which is really the unconscious part. So our brain's split in half, right? And so we have one half that does a lot of kind of visual, it's visual thinking. And the other half is very verbal. And so again, it's not exactly like this, but the visual part is much more unconscious and the verbal part is much more conscious, right? So our words are something that we've learned. It's where, you know, a lot of our logic is, our rationality, our cognitive abilities are in that part. And a lot of our unconscious feelings and emotions and stuff is visual. And so what happens is when we repress these things is we're keeping them locked away in the visual part of our brain, and we're not allowing the other part of our brain to kind of help work through it. Okay. So we think we're doing something good because we don't want to let it up because we don't want to feel all that pain. But what's happening is it's basically keeping the pain there, just cycling through, you know? And so, and this can happen forever. You know what I mean? Like literally can last our entire lives. We could hold on to this and we never work through it. And it feels 50 years later, the same as it did the day it happened. Because it happened and we locked it away and we didn't allow ourselves to genuinely kind of assimilate the event and work through it, you know? And again, it's a process of understanding, assimilating, stealing some of the power away from it. Okay. So some expression benefits, right? So there's inhibition and there's expression. And what we want to do is we want to express this stuff and want to have a safe way to do it. And that's what the hypnotic fire rating is all about. Okay. So again, as I was saying, after confessions, and again, this is confessions, right? So now these people are screwed, right? I mean, now they're going to go to jail. They're going to, you know what I mean? Like their life's changed for the negative, but all of a sudden there's significant drops in blood pressure, heart rate, improved immune functions, right? So again, holding this stuff down just in and of itself is not good, okay, for us. Exposure to upsetting events helps us to relieve the emotional cost on us. And so that's what we're saying here is that if we, there's a number of ways to work through some of these painful traumas that happened. And one of the ways that almost always works is exposure to it, right? As we kind of expose, as we bring these traumas to the light of day, and we kind of look at them, a lot of times it helps us kind of relieve it. And one big way this can happen is that, I'm going to use metaphor here. Sometimes it's like a trauma can happen to us and it's like we make like a DVD of it. And we keep rewatching that DVD. Now I say a DVD because it's like a movie, right? Every time you watch your Ferris Bueller Day Off DVD, you're watching the exact same movie every time, right? It's the same thing sometimes with these traumas. It's like we make a DVD of it and we watch the exact same one. And what happens is we regress. So something happened 40 years ago to you and you're thinking about it now in an unconscious way. You're regressing back to how old you were then, and you're experiencing that situation from the same place you were at back then. And so we lose sight of the fact that we are now no longer in that situation. And for some people, you know, sometimes things happen to when we're kids, okay? And now maybe we're 40 years older, and those same things could not happen to us, right? Because we're adults now. we have more, you know what I mean? We have more abilities to stop these things and, you know, stand up for ourselves and protect ourselves. And so this is just one example of how sometimes when we bring this stuff out and kind of look at it, we start to recognize, okay, that was horrible, but that can't happen to me now. As opposed to when we keep it locked away and it's just this never ending, what do they call it? Perpetual energy, right? It's this perpetual machine of feeling bad and scared and fearful, as the same way as when we experienced it the first time. Okay. So bringing it up to the surface and allowing ourselves to look at it repeatedly, to use the other side of our brain, to get some perspective on it, to assimilate it, to understand it. We work through it and we take away the emotional pain of it. And again, depending on what type of trauma it was, if someone ever did anything to you, we start to take our power back. Okay. And that's really, you know, one of the best things that can happen to you, right? Because it's not fair that it happened the first time. And it's certainly not fair if you're going to stay in that space and be victimized by it for the rest of your life. You know, it's just not fair and you don't deserve that. And so this is a way to kind of move through it. And so of course it gives us an increased feeling of freedom and lightness. It just feels better. Because I'm telling you, this I can tell you personally and from speaking with some other people who have done this, you don't realize how much energy it takes and how negative it can feel because we just assimilate to everything, right? And so if it's something that happened a while ago, that just becomes the new norm. And so when you actually start to bring it to the surface and you work through it, that's when you start to realize, oh my goodness, that took a lot of energy to keep that all down. You know what I mean? To not do it. And so, yes, absolutely. It starts to lead to feeling of freedom and lightness in addition to a million other positive, beneficial things. It feels better. And you take control back and you know, get your wholeness back, you know, if we can say it that way. So one thing I just want to share real quick, because this is how you sometimes, what happens sometimes is we, like I said, we create a lifestyle and we create a personality. Sometimes if we really want to avoid a trauma, we create a lifestyle and a personality built around avoiding this thing. And so one of the examples he talked about was high level versus low level thinking. And it's real simple, right? Low level thinking stuff is he would notice sometimes when people wanted to avoid certain traumas that had happened to them, they would really focus in on real simple stuff. Like they'd get obsessed with cleaning. Did I write that? Yeah. So they get obsessed with cleaning or you know, just superficial things. One guy was like a fellow professor of his. And all of a sudden, like they would talk about books for years. And then this guy experienced a trauma. And then all of a sudden, when they talk about books, all he could talk about is the grammar in the books. You know what I mean? So again, we get pinpointed into real unimportant low level stuff. And sometimes we do that because again, it allows us to stay distracted from the big stuff. And so high level thinking as an alternative is when we do think about the bigger picture. You know, when we write about these things and so I'm saying this to you because when we get into the writing part of this process I'm going to share with you, recognize if you're talking low level thinking or high level thinking. And low level thinking in that could be when you're just talking about the real minutia details of something and you're avoiding the deeper parts of it. And so the high level thinking is kind of the bigger picture of it, the subtle effects that situation may have had on you, getting some new perspectives on it. You know what I mean? Understanding kind of the intricacies, the web nature of events and how one little thing here can affect this and that affects here. You know what I mean? So it's a higher level thinking. And don't be afraid of it because the more high level your thinking is during this process, I think the quicker you move through these things. And again, that's what's on the other end of it, ideally. So expression strategies, real simple. Speaking with someone's obviously one. Now, again, the reason I say this is a little bit self-serving because this just never resonated with me. It's just not something I wanted to do. So I don't do it. If this is something you can do and you like to do, go ahead and do it. Again, they're all, they've all been shown to be effective, okay, in dealing with it. Thought vocalization is recording your thoughts into a microphone. Okay. And then writing. And so a lot of what he did, he was a professor at a college. And so he would do a lot of these studies with college freshmen and he did the speaking with them. But the writing, what he found, it had some benefits and certainly it resonated with me. But again, if these other ones resonate with you, you can do them as well. What I want to convince you of is that if there are things that you know you're holding down, I think it's important to kind of get them out because you don't have to live with them. And a lot of times it's kind of like there's nothing to fear but fear itself with this stuff. And the fear kind of keeps us holding it in, but it allows us, you know, as we kind of get it out of ourselves, like I said, to use our full brain and to genuinely move past it. You know what I mean? Not ignore it anymore, but to genuinely come to terms with it and accept it and move on. So yeah, we're going to talk about writing. And so hypnotic writing, it's real simple, right? So we're going to talk about, I didn't know how to put this in what order. I'm going to talk about hypnotic writing in just 1 second, but basically all you're doing is you're putting yourself into a light trance and then you're doing this writing. And I'll talk about how to do the writing in a second. Putting yourself in a trance, you guys already know how to do this. Okay. Now, by the way, I always use the same induction because I always think of trance as a skill. I could do a different induction every single time, but I don't want to do that. I want you, it's like brushing your teeth, right? You don't need 50 different ways to brush your teeth. You learn one way and then you move on to other things in your life. It's the same thing with trance, right? Let's not make it too confusing here. All you need is it's an inward focus of attention where most of it is this. Most of your brain is dedicated to deconstructing visual stimuli, right? Like that's made like 70% of your brain is basically your eyes, you know, oh, okay, that's what I'm seeing. So as soon as you close your eyes, you got all this extra energy. And there's think about it, right? There's basically meditation and hypnosis where people are closing their eyes and staying awake, right? So it's a state of being that we just don't think about very much as a society. And that's why we're talking about trance. You know what I mean? Like a light hypnotic trance is we're closing our eyes and we're taking all that energy and we're turning it inside so we can pay attention to our physiology and what we're thinking about, what we're focusing on. Okay. So we're closing our eyes, relax the body, take a few deep breaths and think about a situation that you want to write about. Okay. And so this is how we kind of go into it first. Okay. And, what you want to do is you want to connect to the situation. All right. Because for a lot of us, we haven't done this, you know, sometimes when there's a trauma bad enough, we've spent a lot of time doing the opposite of this, right? We do the opposite. We don't want to connect to it. We disassociate from it. So if you're able to connect to it, and again, visual, right? What did you see? What do you remember from that situation visually? Were you inside, outside? Who was there? Any other visual, you know, were there trees around? Were there birds flying around? Whatever things you remember seeing, right? Bring those into your mind. And again, you're doing this with your eyes closed and you're imagining it, right? What did I visually see? Okay, and you're bringing yourself back there as much as you can. Auditory, right? What things do you remember hearing? Right? Was there music playing? Was it silent? Blah, 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 whatever. And then kinesthetic. Now, in kinesthetic, you know that, right? So what do you remember? Is there a breeze on your skin? You know, you can feel the sun on your skin. Were you tense? Were you relaxed? Whatever. Now, I want to point something out here. If there's two ways to do this here, you can associate into this. So if it wasn't that big of a deal, you can just do this normal. If it's something that kind of upsets you, you can disassociate from it. And so the way you can do that is you can imagine that you're looking up at a screen, right? The theater of the mind thing. You're looking up at a screen of the event you want to think about, and you can disassociate it from one or two levels. Okay. And so the first level is you can imagine you're in the theater looking up at the screen. Okay. So it's not you. You're not experiencing it first person. You're watching you on the screen do it. If you want to disassociate a little bit more, you can imagine that you're the one up in the film projector booth watching you in the theater, watching you on the screen. Okay. So now we got two levels of disassociation here. And sometimes if it is an intense enough situation, that might be necessary. Okay. And so that's fine. But what we're doing is we're bringing this stuff up. That's what we're doing. Okay. So we're taking the stuff that we've been stuffing down and we're letting it come up, knowing that what's coming up next. Okay. Which is the hypnotic fire writing. And, what we want to do here, again, as I said, we put ourselves in a light hypnotic state, kind of connect to it as deeply as you want. And then the next thing is we're writing. Okay. So you get yourself a piece of paper and you start writing. Now, what he was doing when he was practicing and it got really good results, 15 minutes at a time. Okay. So this isn't forever. It's 15 minutes. 4 days in a row, right? Seemed to work really well on a subject. It's stream of consciousness. Okay. So it's very, again, you're in a light hypnotic state, you're connected to that, and you're just writing whatever your hand wants to write, whatever your mind wants to write. All right. Really, really important there. Because who knows what's going to come out? Again, this is not, so the other side of hypnosis, right? We have our conscious mind and our unconscious mind. With hypnosis, we're kind of right in the middle. right? So we're less conscious than we normally are, and we're kind of letting our unconscious mind kind of come to the surface a bit more. So stream of consciousness is really just allowing yourself to write whatever comes out of your hand, all right? And not controlling it. And one thing that I think leads to this, right, this is what kind of makes it all, this is where the fire writing comes in. So you write that stuff and you can reread it if you want to. Okay, that's fine. Or you can just burn it. Now, do you want to burn it? That's up to you. I found it very, very freeing. This was a real epiphany for me. I've written in journals. Like I literally have shelves filled with journals that I've filled over the years. But what I realized reading this book is that every time I was writing that journal, I was always holding back a little bit because in the back of my mind, I was always thinking, well, what if someone sees this? What if someone reads this? And so I would absolutely censor myself, even when I was journaling. And so the purpose of this is that you are able to express something 100% with no one ever knowing. Okay. Because what you're doing is you're writing down anything you want to write, right? The worst stuff you can think about, anything you want to write, and then it's gone. It disappears. And I'm telling you, even if, so again, what do you want to do after you do that? Just the process of doing this, in my experience, and some of the people that have been using it, just the process of doing it has been very healing. And so some of the things that I've heard and I've experienced as well, a lot of times what's happening is you're putting something on paper and you may find that it doesn't bother you as much as you thought it was going to bother you. That I found very interesting and very common. Okay, that again, this thing that you were so fearful of and so worried about, when you actually bring it out to the surface now, it's like, oh, what the hell was I so upset about? Okay, so that's happened a number of times. Other things that happen is that you have a different perspective on it, because like I'm saying, I don't think you'll realize it until you do it. But we so much we're regressing, that process of regressing back to the age and the person we were when the thing happened. We don't realize how much that's happening. And so we give ourselves those same qualities. So if it happened when we were a child, we're unconsciously always experiencing it as a child. And so when we write about it as an adult, it changes. It changes instantly. So again, I'm not saying, you might write some stuff and be like, holy cow, I got to go get some therapy. That might happen. You might say, I got to talk to someone about this. So that's a potential. Okay. But I'm also saying another potential is that, and this is definitely, if you do this a number of times, this will happen, that you're going to write and you're going to be like, what the hell? That's not even a big deal. That's really, it doesn't even matter. And so again, you don't have to burn the paper. Do you know what I mean? You understand? I found it very, very freeing. But so again, this is basically hypnotic fire writing. And so any traumas you've had anywhere along the spectrum, if you do this, I think the most important thing it does is it makes you less fearful and, I don't know. It's just more open, because you start to realize that a lot of things you were fearful of letting out weren't as bad as you thought. That's kind of the overall thing I've noticed. I haven't done it enough to notice, you know, if something comes up, oh my God, I'm really messed up. I got to go talk to someone. But if that's the case, that's probably a better thing anyways. Okay. Some other things that he said, I didn't really experience this, and the people I talked to haven't really experienced this, but depending on what it is, while you're writing, and for the few hours afterwards, you may feel kind of crappy, a little bit depressed about it, okay, in the short term. But overwhelmingly, people felt better off after having done this, okay? So, again, I just want to put, you know, kind of every aspect of this. But overall, it seemed to be a very, very beneficial thing. And so, yeah, so it's called the power of confiding in others. But so I was surprised that the thing that was most appealing to me, it is not confiding in others at all, but it was just actually getting this stuff out of my brain and out of my head onto a piece of paper that's gone. And I found that really cool. And so, yeah, if you want to talk to someone though, too, that was shown to be really, really helpful. And so if that's the case, again, some of the key factors, it really matters. Things that you're probably pretty obvious. The person can't be judgmental. They can't hold the information over you in any way. You know what I mean? So it has to be a certain type of person. Think about that first. But again, what I loved about the hypnotic fire writing is it's just like you do it and it's just gone. And, it's a real safe way to explore some of those things that you may have been holding down. Okay. And so, I hope you like this, you know, and test it out. Again, it's kind of like, I always say this, right? It's like, if I tell you about a movie, as opposed to you going to see it. They're two totally different things. I tell you about a roller coaster as opposed to you going on it. Those are two worlds apart. So me telling you about this and you actually doing it, it's the same thing. You understand it to a certain degree, but the experience of it is a completely different situation. Okay. So if you get yourself a chance to do it, and again, the 4 days in a row, you don't have to do that. 15 minutes is good. I wouldn't extend that too much. I think it's nice having a 15 minute limit on it. It went pretty quickly for me. But if you can't make 15 minutes, that's fine too. So this stuff's not hard and fast. None of these rules are absolutely essential. The burning the paper, that's your choice, you know, but it is nice to have a place where you can kind of put that all out. Okay, cool. So yeah, if you have any questions. Carol, I like that. Introverted therapy. Yeah, 100%, right? And that's what it was for me. That's why I say it was self-serving. I've had some things in my life. We all have, let's be honest, right? Some trauma type stuff. And whatever, you know, that's what I liked most about it. It wasn't, for so long, I've kind of judged myself. I'm like, well, I should be able to talk more. You know what I mean? But I don't want to. It's just whatever. And so being able to do this writing thing, all of a sudden it was like, oh, okay, I got a bunch of stuff I want to write about, you know, and just get it out there. And it feels really good. It's a lot of fun. So yeah, cool. Sorry, you guys listen to me sniffle all night. Yeah, Connie says, I like the idea of burning the paper. Yeah, me too. I love it. Introverted therapy. It really is. That's a perfect title for it. I love that. So good. Yeah, Pat writes that. Yeah. I can see how this takes power away from the situation. It really does. I can't even tell you. It was shocking. I mean, I wrote about a couple things and I was expecting this very emotional response and I didn't. And so that's another thing, actually. I'll just share. I mean, it was my father's death, you know, that's always kind of the big one. He died when I was 9 and stuff. So I was like, I'm going to write about that. And I did write about it. And I guess one of the things that I realized is I'm more well adjusted to it than I realized. And I heard that a couple times. That's what I was trying to say. When I went back to it, I've made peace with a lot of it. And so that was nice because I think a big part of me always like, okay, well, there's that trauma I had, you know? And don't get me wrong, I could work more through it and stuff, but it felt nice writing that and feeling better about it. Yeah. Carol says, I'm excited. Maybe wrong word to try this. Carol, you'll love it. What's up, Lenore?
Hey, Jim. I had a question about the writing of it, because I really love that you're teaching us this, but without, and I think I'd like to read the book at some point, but I'd actually really like to dive into this. So, are there any other guidelines about how you write about it? If you write about it like as if it's kind of rehappening, or if you're just writing your feelings about it, or are there any types of other guidelines about
that? Yeah. That's a great question. It was interesting. What was interesting, because he would put some samples of what people wrote. And what was interesting is you could start to see inhibiting language. And it was very, you know, we're all multiple personalities. I believe that, right? So that's a theory, that we're all multiple personalities. And when you were watching this writing with people that were inhibiting traumatic things that had happened to them, and I mean traumatic stuff in this book. So when they did that, they almost split. That's a big cause of multiple personalities, as we understand it, anyways, some trauma happened. But so that happens on a lot of levels. And so when people were writing, you would see the way the words they were using, the which person it was would change. And so what I would suggest is that I think if you put yourself in that kind of a light trance, relax yourself, whatever, reassociate. And again, I think that's important, because if it's something really intense, you want to have a couple barriers to it. And so that theater of the mind trick works really well, you know, in terms of having that. You could literally back it out another level, where you could be the guy at the popcorn stand watching the person in the projector. You know what I mean? Like that kind of gives us some mental buffering from that. But then if you put yourself in that state and you just, it's really kind of like whatever my unconscious mind wants to write, you know what I mean, about it. And so you kind of give yourself just wide open stuff. And it's really interesting. What I found and what people have told me, they kind of verify this. Sometimes it's all over the place. You know what I mean? But it's cool. It was interesting reading it back. When I do it, I get about a page, page and a half, depending on what I'm writing about. And so I'll go and I'll read it back. And it's like, it's funny that I didn't remember writing some of it. I found that interesting. You know, yeah. I knew the general idea of what I wrote about, but some of the specifics in there, I'd forgotten I'd written about that. And I wrote about 10 minutes earlier, you know?
Wow.
So again, that's what brings me to, I find it so fascinating that I think we, if we do have anything, we all have something that we know it's not talking about normally. Sure. And, we're so used to forgetting about it, to walling it off. You know what I mean? To all these mental yeah. things we do that I think it's interesting. That's what I found so interesting is reading that. I'm like, oh, geez, I never say that. I never even think it. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, oh my God, yeah. it's right there. But then it's cool knowing it's just going to be burned. Watching it burn is very, I don't, you know, for me, again, that's why I'm just sharing this. I don't know what experience you'll have with it, but knowing that I was going to burn it and just being, having free reign to write it. I've literally never felt that in my life. Even one time in my life for a second. Yeah. So it was so cool. And then watching it burn, it was cool. I don't know. It's just, it sounds more, I will say this, like right now you might be thinking it sounds more powerful than it actually is. The power of it is very subtle though, but it's a fun exercise. Even if you just want to play with it, it's really cool. 'Cause you can write anything, your deepest thoughts. That's another one I noticed. I would write some stuff and then I'd be like, that's not true. You know what I mean? Like I would write it because it's like a thought that came up and then my brain, I don't believe that. And so that was really fascinating too, because sometimes we have these thoughts and we don't want to even let them, you know what I mean? Like, we're like, oh God, don't think that, don't think that. And this is an opportunity to do that. And so then you write it out and you're like, oh, I don't think that. And so all of a sudden now you don't have to hold that down anymore. And in a general sense, you get less worried and scared of the thoughts that you're having.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so it's weird because, again, I don't know. I mean, we all inhibit to different levels, but I know I inhibit to a fairly good level. Yes. I know that. Yeah. And so it was, I've never seen a process like this. So yeah, it was real cool. But so yeah, just write it and just have fun with it and just allow your unconscious mind to write anything that comes up. It may go, again, you're bing-bonging all over the place. You're starting over here and you end up over here somehow. I would say let yourself do that. And then just judge by yourself, you know, at the end of it, if you're like, well, you know, tomorrow I want to keep it more, you know, focus on this, you know, do that. Just kind of see how it makes you feel. You know what I mean? Base it all around you. Notice how you feel the next day. Notice what thoughts come up over the next day, you know? So really pick a topic. Like I think the 4-day thing is a pretty good rule, because what ends up happening is you'll trigger new memories. You'll trigger new thoughts. And so then when you go back the second day, it's different. And then you're, you know what I mean? Then you're kind of mulling stuff over a little bit more. But again, now you're mulling stuff over in a different way than you normally do. And then you go back to the third day and it's like, so yeah, just be loose with it. I would suggest, you know, and just let yourself write whatever kind of comes out of your hand. Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah. I did something, this forgiveness journal exercise, which there was the burning of, and that was really great, but adding the light trance into it and having it be more wide open, I think is really cool.
Yeah. 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 It's kind of like, this is a gross metaphor, but it's like flushing the toilet. Like it's like, there's so much stuff for me. It's like gross, but it's kind of like, you know what I mean? Like we just hold on to so much stuff. And yes. I guess that's what I realized. I'm like, when you get some of it out, not all of it, some of it's kind of like, okay, no wonder I held on to that and don't want to let it out. But a lot of it's kind of like, it's really not, what the hell? It's not a big deal. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, that's me anyways. You know what I mean? You might have a totally different experience, but yeah, it's kind of like, what? And so it's like, why'd I hold that in? And I realized, I'm a inhibitor. And so realizing I don't have to be that. There's no purpose of that. And so I had to do it myself first though. You know what I mean? So it's, I never felt I could just do that with other people with some of these things. And so just let it out. It felt really nice. So yeah. It's probably similar to the forgiveness thing, but again, it's a wide open blank canvas and you know you're going to burn it. And you put yourself in that trance.
That was already powerful. So I'm really interested in this. And one of the things that kind of came up as you were talking, I remembered when I was younger and I would have some stuff that I didn't want to think about, I would visualize myself opening up a closet and putting it in a box and putting it in the closet. And you know, I didn't have any, I know that's really twisted, right? But I didn't have the tools or I didn't have any other way to deal with it. And it's just like, wow, that shows you how powerful visualization was, because that was a tool that let me continue on at the time.
Right.
But you know, some boxes might need to get unpacked at some point. Right. So
that's what I mean. That's the beautiful metaphor. That's it. That's 100%. And that's what I do to some level. And it's funny. I'll give you an example. And this was, so I was talking to my mom about this. And so the big thing in our lives, you know, my father died when he was 54 and she was 44, you know what I mean? She was just a house mom. You know what I mean? He owned a business and he was the moneymaker. And now she's got a 9-year-old and a 6-year-old to raise. You know what I mean? So it's just like, holy shit. So it's like, I remember her saying like when that happened, she just wanted us to smile and just be happy and not feel sad. And the other day she's like, you know, I totally was wrong. I should have let you guys, you know what I mean? Be sad and cry and get that stuff out. But I mean, again, everyone just makes the choices they make. You know what I mean? At the time, but you learn from that. You know what I mean? Like again, she's just doing the best she can, but you know what I mean? You inherit that to a certain degree and you kind of watch what's going on. Okay. This is how we respond to it. Same as what you're saying. Yeah. You'll just take this and put it in that way in the back and you start that metaphor is so beautiful because I promise you, you do that a lot more than you realize with a lot of things. So, and again, some of the things deserve to be in there, you know what I mean? Unpacked at a certain time, but you're going to find, I think that there's a lot of things in there that just, it's like, why am I putting those in there?
Right. Just clutter.
You know,
that's yeah. Awesome. Just clear out that clutter.
Yeah. 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 And exactly. It's right. The hoarder thing. So that's what I mean. Like clearing and becoming more of your potential. Cause there's a lot going into it. It is like the hoarder thing where there's this, like, again, unconsciously, it's like I'm doing this here, like this over, you know what I mean? Like a closet full of boxes. You know what I mean? There's an energy to that, you know?
Yeah.
You can clear a lot of it out.
I hadn't even thought about the fact that I did that for so long ago until your lesson. I was like, whoa. Okay. Wow.
That's what I mean. Though. Okay. That is the, I'm so glad you said that because that's exactly what I mean. Like where you find something like I was doing a call today and it was about this. And I know I always say this game that we're playing here of really kind of growth and evolving, the first step and the hardest step and the most important step always is becoming aware. Right. You know what I mean? So it's like you said, it's like, as soon as you realize, oh God, that's a kind of a mental process I have of putting things in a box, put in the closet, put it away, hide it away. Like once you realize that, well, now you can solve it, you know, at least work towards solving it. It's when we have no awareness of it all. You know what I mean? That it's like, we can't even fix it. You know what I mean? It's just running. So much of this process, that's why I say like you got to love your mistakes because a lot of times the mistakes are the same type of thing that lets you know the unconscious stuff you're doing, you know? So yeah, it's exciting though. And that's where I hope that is exciting. I know it is for you right now, even just having these realizations of like, wow, you know?
For sure.
Can't believe I do that. That's awesome.
Thank you so much.
Cool. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. James Pennebaker. Connie wrote. Thank you. Yeah. That book is good. It's good. And it's good to read these books too, by the way, if you get them, you know, you don't have to, I should do a whole lesson on speed reading, but I'll sum up the most important thing I ever learned. I learned how to speed read when I was like 20 or something, but the key thing I learned out of that was that even when I read books normal, I retained and comprehended 30%, 40% maybe. When I speed read, I probably comprehend 25%, but I'm comprehending 25% of lots of books. So when I mention these books, go get them from the library and just, you know, scan through them. You know, you get a little more context and that can be helpful, but you don't always got to read all these books from post to cover. I just want to share that with you. All right. So let's see. Oh, Connie says, yeah, these traumatic memories are referred to as emotional flashbacks. Yeah, that's right. And that's what happens sometimes, right? Is that sometimes it's the boogeyman under, the boogeyman under the bed is like this, it's like a metaphor for these thoughts we have and we're trying to avoid them and push them. What do we know? Do we know about not thinking about bananas? Right. So these thoughts and these memories and this inhibiting, it gives them more power, right? We're not trying to think about the things we don't like, right? Not thinking about bananas. We're not thinking about bananas all day. And so it's like it builds up all that energy, right? So this is the exact, you know, this is just one more example of that whole thing. But yeah, and so the flashbacks come over when all of a sudden we can't hold them back anymore. They kind of just take over, you know? Yeah, Pat says, seeing it from another viewpoint is helpful. You know, that specifically, by the way, is helpful. I'm just going to share that with you real quick. This isn't quite exactly what we're talking about. But one thing, if you struggle like with eating at night, for example, one of the things you can kind of do, because you're always experiencing it, it's always back to right, the nose on your face, right? You see your nose all day long, all night. Well, when your eyes are closed, you don't see it. But every time your eyes are open, you see your nose, your brain deletes it. There's no point in seeing your nose. It does the same thing with a lot of our behaviors and our thoughts. And so kind of a cool thing, you just made me think of this, Pat, is that say you're overeating at night and the thing is you're always experiencing that behavior from the first person point of view. So a real helpful technique can be if you imagine you're like a fly up in the corner of your ceiling and imagine watching yourself from a different point of view. So anyway, I just want to share that because that can be a helpful thing. But that's what this does too, by the way. The writing about it, it's a different perspective just because if it happened a long time ago, you're a different person now. And like I said, I don't know. I haven't had an experience where someone or myself have touched into something so painful that it's kind of messing us up. And I'm not saying that can't happen, because certainly it could. But more of what I'm hearing is that it's a realization like, oh, that wasn't even that big of a deal. I'm seeing that a lot more. And I think that's because the perspective now is you're not in that situation anymore, is what I'm finding more than anything else. You don't have to worry about that. It's over. It happened. And you have moved on and you're stronger and more well-adjusted than you realize. So that's happened a lot. Or you realize, oh, that thing happened and I'm screwed up because of it, because of this here, right? And now you have awareness of what that is. Now you can go to work on fixing it. So it seems like overall, most of the time, the realizations, the distinctions that we make from doing this are curative and beneficial, you know, more than it triggering up old stuff and feelings. The old feelings, the feelings are just the feelings, right? Again, again, we're going back to the neuroscience of it. If you're only thinking about this in the visual part of your brain, it's very emotional. We don't have the words to put to it. And so it's very vague. It's very feel, it's the boogeyman, right? It's the boogeyman under the bed. It's all just kind of innuendo. It's feeling, it's vague. It's just there and we don't want to think about it. But when we actually, it's kind of like when we all of a sudden get a flashlight and look under the bed, there's nothing there. Well, the fear starts to dissipate. So it's, oh, there's nothing there. The fear gets bigger and bigger the longer we don't look under the bed. The more we imagine it, the more we, you know, we get scared. So it's a little bit like that. Pat Ray, I find that keeping a journal of ideas I've learned can be a helpful reminder of what I thought was helpful. Yeah, definitely. I think that too, by the way. That's when I read it, I always write things down. I'm working on reviewing it more because there's a thing called the forgetting curve. And basically we forget 80% of what we learned in 24 hours, right? And so that's why I love doing these lessons, because I get to kind of go back to it and reinforce it. But what I'm working on kind of implementing is before I start reading is to take 5 minutes and just review what I wrote down the day before. But writing it down, right? What we're talking about is modalities here. And so when you, this is like a memory technique. Like if you're learning a phone number, you write it out with your fingers, you know, because now you're putting it in muscle memory. You're visualizing it. You're saying it out loud or in your head. And so you're kind of hitting all the modalities. So when you write down good ideas, I always feel like that's just one extra thing you're doing that's kind of installing it a bit. So I think I agree with that. Oh yeah. Connie writes, yeah, yeah. Oh yeah. When childhood traumas occur, we're absorbing this from a helplessness. Yeah. Yeah, parents or adults are in essence gods. We know nothing and they know everything. Yeah, that's 100% true. What's up, Pat? You know how to unmute your, where are you at? Are you on video, Pat? I got you unmuted if you want to talk.
Oh, can you hear me?
Yeah, yep.
Okay, there I am. All right. Yeah, no, I was just going to say that I remember Tony Robbins talking about going back in some of your most traumatic moments. Mm-hmm. And then rewinding them and yep. then rewinding them back and forth and then making them almost kind of funny, adding characters in there.
Yeah.
Anything you can do to take away the emotional mm-hmm. trauma of the situation.
Yeah.
Because it really is just our memory and we keep going back to a painful memory. How can we expect to feel anything else but pain?
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. 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 He called that the erasure technique and it works. There's something weird about playing things backwards. That's why we do that in the, when we kind of have a when we do something we didn't like to do, we kind of rewind it. There's something about rewinding things in our mind that, that does something. But those techniques are great. It is funny. It's like, they're good for some things I've found. But you will find, or I have found anyways, cause I remember I did Tony Robbins course 100 times, but I never wanted to touch certain things. And, there was a fear of it, but I think you're right. Yeah. That when you change some of the qualities of it, you change how you feel about it. And once you change how you feel about it, you can kind of look at it. And again, you use your full brain to look at it and you're like, okay, it's not, that wasn't as scary as I thought it was going to be. So yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, that really helps. That playing stuff backwards, it's weird. I was looking for the signs of what that does. I don't really know, but yeah, playing things backwards is, it's really interesting how it does that. So what's this? Jillian said Jim and Dan had a question about getting into a hypnotic state. The question got passed up in the chat feed. Oh, thank you. Thank you, Jillian. Yeah, okay, Dan. So let me see if I can. Is it in here? Let me see. Oh, okay. There it is. Okay. So I'm new here. Don't know much about inducing a self-hypnotic trance or whatever that was. Okay. So the first thing I would suggest is that what I would first do is I would use some of the sessions that are in the program. Okay. Now, again, I always use the same induction. And I use the same one for myself. I do this stuff the same way because it's like you writing with your hand, right? You're not always practicing like writing with one hand and then writing with your other hand and then practicing writing with your toes. We just write the same way every time, so we don't learn how to do it. Same thing with trance. And so I would suggest listening to any of the sessions, right? Any of the topics that kind of interest you, go listen to those because they're all going to bring you through the same. I'm a huge fan of the induction, the relaxation induction, because A, it's multi beneficial, right? So you relax your body, you start breathing deeper. But what you're doing is you're taking your attention, you're bringing it inwards, right? And that's what Milton Erickson, the most famous hypnotist of all time, that's how he used to define hypnosis. It's the inward focus of attention. And so I would listen to the sessions just so I can guide you through it. But after you do it for a little bit, you're going to realize it's just a state. And it's a state where you're relaxed, you're calm. You're breathing differently, you're bringing your attention inside. And what we're looking to do with hypnosis is our imagination is more to the front. Think of it this way, and this is something a lot of people can relate to. It's like hypnosis is the state between sleeping, being awake, and being asleep. And we all pass through that hypnagogic state when we fall asleep and when we wake up, but we typically notice it when we're falling asleep. They call it falling asleep because it feels like we're falling a lot of times, right? Now, it literally feels like we're falling. And so our imagination is again coming up to the surface and it feels more real. And that's basically what we're doing with hypnosis. We're looking to program our unconscious mind by using our imagination. And so that's what we want to do with hypnosis. When we're imagining ourselves acting in a new way, you know what you should do. Right? You've known what you should do for a long time, but knowledge doesn't equal behavior. And so what is going to influence your behavior on a much deeper level is when you imagine yourself as the person you want to be, as you imagine yourself behaving the way that you want to behave, because there's so much involved with that. You know, so when you imagine yourself, you know, waking up in the morning, feeling good, eating the right breakfast, going about your day, walking, you know, a little taller, breathing a little deeper, making the right lunch choice, drinking your water, going through the day you want to be, you're imagining that, but there's so many little subtle things. There's things you're saying to yourself. There's the way you hold yourself. There's the way you speak to other people. There's the feeling of you filling up your water bottle, the feeling of you drinking it. And so you can imagine this in detail and you're absorbing so much more information that's going to make it more likely, as opposed to saying, oh yeah, I should be healthy tomorrow. Oh, I should drink more water tomorrow. Okay. When you imagine yourself drinking water, unconsciously, you're imagining the place that you're in. You're imagining the time of day. You're imagining what it feels like to pick up the bottle and hold it to your mouth, or the glass and hold it to your mouth. What it feels like to drink that water throughout the day and how much better it's going to make you feel. So again, it's such a much, much, much richer. You know what it's like? It's like the difference between reading a review of a movie and watching the movie, right? The movie is this experiential, you know, sensory rich experience. as opposed to just reading, like, you know, the synopsis of a movie. And that's typically how we think about change. We just give ourselves a synopsis and think we should do it. Well, we need the richer experience to program our unconscious mind. What to do, when to do it, how to do it, why we want to do it, how good it feels to do it. And so we're using hypnosis, which again is just really tapping into the power of our unconscious mind and our imagination. Because what we're really looking to do is we want this healthy stuff that we're doing to feel like we've been doing it for years. Right. And so by imagining it, we make it a much richer thing. And this is how we think naturally. When you think about brushing your teeth, right, you've got unconscious programming that does it. You do it the same time, the same place, the same way every time. You don't have to think about it at all. Okay. You just kind of unconsciously do it. So we're looking to replicate that intentionally by using hypnosis. And so to put yourself into a hypnotic state, for this case here, it's really just a very, very light state, which, I mean, we could call it relaxing, but it's more than that, simply because we're going back into the event. And so we're using our imagination. And so again, visually, what do we see? Auditorily, what do we hear? You can go through smell and taste. Those are typically less involved factors, but when they're there, they can be powerful. And then kinesthetically, right? What do we feel? And then we bring those feelings into our body. Okay. And so we connect to that experience with our imagination. So, you know, you could think about hypnosis really as imagination, right? Pretending. there's more to it than that, but that's kind of a simple way to think about it. So I hope that helps out. But initially listen to the sessions, okay? Because I'll guide you through it. It's easier to listen and to do it. But eventually you want to be able to just do it on your own instantly. And again, I'm not talking about going to a deep state of trance. You don't have to go into a deep trance. In self-hypnosis, this is really all based, I call it self-hypnotic programming. You're putting yourself into a light hypnotic state where your imagination is much more vivid, and then you're imagining things the way you want them to be. Okay? That's the real quick explanation. Let's see. Yes. Watch out for Jim's sleep hypnosis. Yeah, that sleep hypnosis works really, really well, right? Why? Because think about this. Hypnosis is basically the process of bringing someone who's awake right to the edge of sleep. And then I don't want them to fall asleep, because if you fall asleep, there's no consciousness there. Okay. So we want to kind of straddle that sleep line. And we want to have your consciousness there. And again, especially with self-hypnosis, when you're doing this to yourself, you want to have some awareness of what you're doing. But we really want to be focusing and utilizing the imagination. But so when we do sleep hypnosis, it's real simple, because we're just bringing someone straight to sleep, right? And so we don't have to worry about kind of straddling that line. So sleep hypnosis is literally the science of falling asleep. You know, that to me, self-hypnosis is the science of falling asleep, because you're bringing yourself down right to the edge of sleep, and then you're just allowing yourself to go over it, you know, fall into it. So I was a crappy sleeper and I became a great one. And I believe as far as the hypnosis, the meditation don't hurt either. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sleeping's essential too. Yep. Great, Dan. I'm glad you like that. I'll try it tonight, Connie. Yeah, Pat, definitely listen to those sessions. I'm going to do this. I'm going to get that sleep session in there this week. I want to say too, by the way, those of you that are in month 4, I appreciate your patience. There's a bunch of technical issues I had, some other issues for getting the lessons done for month 4, but they're all up there now. They're awesome. They're really good. So I'm excited if you listen to them. But if you've been waiting, I appreciate that. And they should be good to go. So if you have any issues accessing them, log out and log back in. Okay. It's advanced nourishment, deep dive into it. It's awesome stuff. Yeah, Jolene, I should do that too. Waking up at 2:30 and not being able to fall back asleep is getting old. Yeah, it's the worst. By the way, though, let me just throw one more thing out at you. The waking up between 1 and 2, 3 o'clock, right? That's a common one we all got. Something I stumbled upon is I started meditating, right? Cause I always want to meditate in the morning, but I'm like, if I'm waking up at, cause sometimes it's just like bink, you know what I mean? The eyes are just open and it's like, I'm fine with that, because now I'll go and meditate. And I find if I meditate, I mean, even just 5 minutes, 10 minutes, I kind of work through that energy or whatever it is that wake me up. And I've found that I every time I go back to sleep, I pretty much am falling right to sleep. People have used the Sleep at Will program. So there's sessions specifically designed for when you wake up in the middle of the night to listen to them and fall back to sleep. Another one though, if you wake up, is this one here to do the fire writing, right? Sometimes I'm going to share one, right? So I did a call today, and this is a person who had an extreme experience in their house towards the evening. And now all of a sudden they've been waking up at between like 1 and 2 in the morning, right? And it's totally, totally related to this experience. So sometimes we have some trauma that might've happened or something that's on our mind. And so this is a great opportunity to practice the fire writing, right? And just kind of get these thoughts out of your head, you know, if that's what's keeping you up. Your posture creates emotion, definitely. Jolene, my guess is that when some of the work stress gets resolved, you'll sleep better naturally. I've been there too, more than once. Yeah, definitely, right? Without question. Work stress definitely affects our sleep. One other thing too is if you decide to lie in bed, and they don't recommend that. So if you're lying in bed for like 10, 15 minutes and not falling asleep, all the insomnia doctors tell you to get up, just do something different, even though it's the last thing we feel like we want to do. But sometimes we just need a reset. Okay. So if it's a while, do that. The other thing is that when you're lying in bed, it's a great opportunity just to practice your relaxation, right? That can be helpful. Practicing some self-hypnotic programming, imagining the next day going well. Because a lot of times we wake up at 2 o'clock and we start doing the math in our head and like, oh, I got 6 hours, I got 3 hours left. Oh, I'm going to be so miserable tomorrow. And we're programming ourselves, but we're programming ourselves to have the worst day ever tomorrow. Can imagine the worst. And then what happens? We start releasing adrenaline to our body, right? And that starts waking us up more. So we want to be aware of the process that's going on and change it up. Dan writes, I want to learn how to put gym sessions onto my phone, which is by my bed at night. I can't easily take a computer to bed. Yeah. You know what you can do, and I'm sure you could do this with an Android too, but with what you guys ought to do if you want to is you can bookmark the program pages. You can bookmark the program page that gives you all of your lessons and all of your courses. And you can put that on your like home screen. So you can press the button, it'll go to that page. So that's an easy way to just keep it there. Right. Because I know a lot of people that do that listen to those sessions when they wake up at night. And the interesting thing is twofold. A, those sessions help. You wake up and you listen to them and you kind of fall back to sleep. Again, all I'm doing is I'm just focusing your mind on the solution, right? You want to relax. You want to fall asleep. Okay. I promise you, you're not doing that. You're waking up and you're getting pissed off that you're awake and how tired you're going to be tomorrow. And you're fantasizing the whole thing out and getting more and more mad. So when you intentionally focus yourself on relaxation, and I always tell myself, even if I don't fall asleep, I'm going to relax. I'm going to enjoy my time in bed because I know in the middle of the day, there's no place more I want to be than in my bed. So that's helpful. But the other thing is once you start having a strategy for what you do, if you wake up, you start to reduce the fear and the anxiety that you're going to wake up, right? Cause sometimes after you wake up a couple nights in a row, it starts to become, you know, a primary thought and it starts to become a self-fulfilling prophecy. Jolene writes, I'm sure you're right. Connie, my brain kicks in about work. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yep, Connie writes, I'm stressing about the legal stuff, so I can relate, but Jim's new stress reduction session is great. Yeah, by the way, that's a good session for anyone that's dealing with them. It's calm during stress. And that's a great example, right? That, don't get me wrong, I mean, there's stresses in the world. So I'm not saying like you listen to this and you won't experience stress. But what I am saying is it's a very powerful proof that even in the most stressful situations, depending on how you focus your mind and what you do with your body, you can feel relaxed, even in stressful situations. And once you prove that to yourself a couple of times, it's weird. It becomes a belief and you begin less, you're less worried about feeling the stress, which is helpful. Yep. Yeah. Pat writes, yeah, right. It's totally like that. We don't think about how much we need to sleep and it makes it the worst. So intentionally, it's a great opportunity to use your mind. Counting sheep don't work. I just read a book on that the counting sheep thing didn't work. So what does work, I'm telling you, is you relax your body. Again, so here's the options, right? You get up and you meditate for a few minutes. I found that to be the best for me. You get up and write. You know, you can do this writing, whatever you're thinking about. And if you just get it out of your head, I mean, imagine that would do a similar thing in the meditation. You lay there and you relax your body. You do the progressive relaxation, relax my toes, relax my calves, relax my feet, move up, around, breathe, feel yourself sinking into the bed. So you're influencing your body. And then you can imagine tomorrow going exactly the way you want it to go. Okay. And again, what you're doing is you're focusing your brain in the direction you want it to go. Jolene writes, where is the stress reduction session? That's a great question. you know, I always struggle with this, where to put these sessions, where I have them now. Yeah, I like that. Blessings instead of sheep. Oh, that is beautiful. Ah, I love that one. I'm always working on increasing the gratitude. So that's a really good one. That is so good. So anyways, where are they? SoundCloud. If you guys are familiar with that, it's SoundCloud, and I think it's / Jim Katsoulis, but I got a bunch of sessions up there. There's sessions all in the program. I should make a page that just has all the sessions in it. Then you can just go to that one. And I'll put that on the old list. All right. It's a good one. But I know I want to make those easier for you. The SoundCloud's probably the easiest, because it's like you can get the SoundCloud app on your phone. So it's already right there and it plays nice. It sounds nice. So if you haven't done that, that's an easy way to listen to those sessions. Can you send us all a link to your sessions on SoundCloud? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I gotta figure out a better way to, yeah, to get those out to you guys. All right, cool. Yeah, session SoundCloud. Yeah, like I said, it is SoundCloud / Jim Katsoulis. And there's kind of a lot of various ones there, but also in the program, right? So they're in there too. But they're all kind of different, right? Program itself then's got all the kind of weight and health ones. SoundCloud's got a whole variety of them. And then I should put them all together. All right, cool. All right, everyone. Have a super duper week. And yeah, everything. I'm trying to think of anything else I want to tell you. Nope. Just you poor folks on the week, month four. I apologize for being a little delayed there, but you'll have it now. So cool. All right, Pat, I'm glad you enjoyed it. I'm glad you guys all enjoyed it. Yeah. Thanks, Dan. You're the best. So I wish you the best here. All right, guys, have a super duper week and we'll talk next Tuesday. Good night, everyone.